Welcome to Corrittles. This week, Stupid Email Mistakes Chapter 2, Part 1. The questions discussed answers are, what mistakes am I making in my emails? Why are they mistakes? And what should I do instead of sending an email? Results, retention, relationship, respect for others, and relevancy. They're all key tenets in the managerial arena, and you don't have to be a natural-born people person to be a great manager. It's really more about the discipline, behaviours, and processes around communication and trusting relationships. That makes it sound really simple. And it's not simple, but it's certainly learnable and repeatable, where you, the manager, can create an environment where there's less uncertainty. If you want to learn more, contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com and talk to her about our client effective manager training. We can deliver on-site or virtually for up to 30 of your managers with the Manager Tools Enterprise Licensing Benefits featuring Roadmap. This is the second chapter of our Stupid Email Mistakes series. We covered the first 6 mistakes in chapter 1, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that because we're going to try not to repeat ourselves. But there's so many mistakes that people make in email. It's easy to come up with a list. It's easy to know what things frustrate you over, because we all have so much email, but there's no class, or at least there was no class in school when I was at school that was how to use email effectively. I suspect there still isn't, because that's kind of like how to balance your checkbook and, you know, how to pay your taxes, all useful things that we don't learn in school. And when I was at school, there was no email because I'm that old. But so maybe it's not unexpected that we're so bad at it, but, you know, ignorance is no defense, as my mother always told me when I tried to tell her I didn't know. And it's so easy to fix our mistakes. So we're going to talk about some more mistakes and how to fix them.
Yeah, our outline for today is, first, not considering the communication style of your recipient. This is a great one. I can't wait to talk about it. Then replying too quickly or too slowly. We'll talk about kind of a happy medium there. Number 3 is passive-aggressive cliches. That's always fun, right? We'll go through some memes. Number 4 is attachments that could be emails. We'll talk a little bit about how to do that. Then number 5 is send email off hours. And lastly, doing email instead of managing it. And doing is in quotes, right?
Yes. So it's
air quotes.
Doing emails. Oh, look, that doesn't help if I do the air quotes. Nobody can see me.
Nobody can see. I mean, I can. So really, this podcast is just for me.
And, exactly. You
know, everyone else gets to listen. So we start with mistake number 7, because we've covered 6 in chapter 1. And that is not considering the communication style of your recipient. Then this goes back to, if you've been listening to Career Tools or Manager Tools for any length of time, you've probably heard us say or heard Mark say, communication is what the listener does. Communicating according to their preference, your audience's preference, is hundreds of times more effective than communicating to your preference. And we all have preferences, right?
Absolutely. Sending an email is no more communicating than sending a letter is, or at least putting that letter in the mailbox. It's not a communication. It's just a piece of paper in a mailbox at that stage. It's not till the letter arrives and it's open and read that any of the message gets through to the person it was intended for. And even if you read a letter, you don't necessarily understand it. So communication still hasn't happened. I think the most incomprehensible letters I get are from insurance companies and banks. And the number of times I have to call and say, I don't understand what you wrote, or I don't understand what you're asking me to do. And then they'll say, like, oh, we're just sending you the information. Well, thanks. Like, I didn't understand it, and I clearly didn't need the information, otherwise I'd have asked for it. You know, that's still not communication. I might have received the letter, I might have read it, but I still don't know what I'm supposed to do or understand, and so that's not communication.
Yeah, Wendy, there's a few times in this cast that we talk about insurance companies or banks, and not with every cast, but some casts, before we record it, I read it out loud just to make sure, you know, I mm-hmm. you know, can think through it and say the right words and know where I want to add some things. And for those of you who don't know, my wife works for a large insurance company.
Yes.
And as I was reading this cast out loud, she, you know, was walking around the corner and she heard me and she goes, "Gosh, why the attack on insurance companies? What does Wendy have against insurance companies?" I immediately came to Wendy's defense and said, "Well, I mean, if you're going to attack or, you know, poke or prod any industry, I think banking and insurance, they expect it. It's understandable." So I don't know that I defended you well, but I did immediately yeah. come to your defense.
I'm sorry, Amanda, and everybody else who works in an insurance company. I'm going to claim it's mostly health insurance, and it's mostly because I didn't grow up with it, and it just seems very confusing to me.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that is a valid argument. Sometimes I think it's intentionally confusing. So going back to, sorry for that aside, but going back to communicating to our listeners' preferences or our audience's preferences, we can divide our colleagues, our bosses, our customers, anyone that we would correspond with in email into two groups: readers and listeners. There are those people who prefer to read something so that they can take their time with it. They can read more complex or complicated parts several times. If they need to, they can make notes or reword it into phrasing or language that is more in line with their thinking, right? Restating it, thinking through it in a different way. There are others who prefer to listen so that they're able to use facial expressions and body language to augment their comprehension of the message. And neither one of these styles or approaches are correct. They're preferences. You have a preference too. The problem comes when you use your preference to communicate with someone who has a different preference. That's what this is all about.
Exactly. And listeners, people who prefer to listen, don't want to read a long or even a short email. They'd rather you called or visited them so that they can hear the message and see you giving it. You can follow up with an email if you need to. In most cases, listeners aren't even reading your email fully. They're thinking,
this is true.
They're seeing it and then thinking, "Oh, I'll ask her later about that." Or, "I'm going to see them in that meeting. I'll ask and get them to explain it." That's why you're not getting a timely reply. It's not because they don't know the answer. Well, it is because they don't know the answer, because they don't know what the question is. But it's not an intentional, "Oh, I'm not going to answer that email." It's a, "Oh, I'm going to wait until I see that person, and then we can just hash it out quickly between us." They may have seen your email when you ask. If you say, "Have you seen my email?" they'll say yes, because they saw it in their inbox. Mm-hmm. Or Outlook might say they've read it, which only means they've opened it, not that they've read it or understood it. The communication hasn't happened because in their mind, the communication will happen later when you have a conversation about it.
Yeah. I've worked with people who, when someone says, "Did you get my email? Did you get that email I sent? Did you see that email about this thing?" And I've heard, I thought this was a funny response. I've heard people say, "I know that that email exists, but that's all I'm willing to acknowledge."
Exactly. And part of the reason, I guess, that I have a problem with insurance companies, apart from anything, is that they do send me a letter that has a bunch of small print that I don't want to mm-hmm. read. And I would rather call and say, "I understood this. Is it right?" And someone say yes or no, than me read the letter several times and the small print and go research what the deductible is to understand it. It takes me 2 minutes to call someone and speak to someone. And I don't think I'm particularly a listener, but in those circumstances, that's the mismatch of communication styles. It's not the way I want to understand this particular thing.
Right, exactly. That's a great point. So before you send an email, go back to our first chapter in this series and go to mistake number 2 and ask yourself, is email the right medium? And this is a fantastic analogy, but think of it like choosing a plate for a meal. There are some meals where a bowl is the perfect medium for eating, for consuming that meal. Cereal or yogurt, for example, these are meals where a bowl is perfect, is well suited for containing all of the stuff that you need, right? Ice cream. Excellent. Yeah. Granola, oatmeal, those are all, a bowl is a good vessel for that. But there are other meals where a bowl would actually make eating more difficult, more challenging. A steak, for example, cutting a steak in a bowl, not good. So in any case, it's always food, but the plate makes a difference to how effectively you get it into your body. In the same way, it's always your message, but the way that you deliver it makes a difference on how it gets into the brain of your recipient. And it's just such a poignant analogy for how the medium or the vehicle of delivery is so critical when it comes to communication.
It's the same with, I'm one of those people who can't use chopsticks. I am not very physically adept, and my brain just can't do it. And I'm one of those people that has to, in fact, people can tell if I'm in a Chinese restaurant, they just seem to look at me and go, you need a fork, which is true. I do. But the difference, you know, the difference between how much I can eat with a fork and how much I can eat with chopsticks is massive. Same deal, right?
Yeah, it's a great point.
It's still food, but the instruments which I have make a difference to how much I can consume.
Yeah. I'll get you some. My kids have chopsticks. They're joined at the top, and they have a little T-Rex mouth that opens when you open and close them.
I got some as a gift from somebody, and I still can't manage. It's pathetic. I know. Another way to look at communication styles is to use DISC or MT DISC. And this is, if you haven't heard us talk about DISC before, where have you been? Yeah. But it looks at people's preferences for people versus task and assertive versus reserved. So task-focused people like D's and C's want you to be factual in your email. They need to know what you want them to do. The people-focused folks, I's and S's, want to make sure that you collect on a human level as well as send a message. They're the people that ask you how you are. And if you ask them how they are, they answer the question rather than ignore it, like I do. They're much more likely to start their emails with anything other than the actual subject of the email. Yep. Assertive people, D's and I's, tend to send short emails, and they want you to get to the point because they're fast moving and we're going and they want you to come with them. Reserved people, S's and S's, want the detail and they want to understand the situation fully before they take action. And we have podcasts about sending emails to all of these types where you can get down to the nitty gritty of whether or not to put dear so-and-so and how to structure the end of your email with the contact details for different types. But the point is that different people want different things. And I want an email that's focused on them, that's a people-to-people connection, but is also short. So probably an email that says, hey, should we talk about this over lunch? An S wants something longer, and they want to make sure that you're okay and that you've asked them if they're okay and all of that before you get to what might be a difficult point. So those different styles, we have a whole bunch of podcasts about that. So you can just go to manage-tools.com, put in the search bar, email and the hi, whatever, DISLC, and you'll find them. And then the others are connected.
And if you want even more in-depth information, we cover it in our training. When we do our Effective Communicator Conference or our Effective Communicator Training, we have a whole section of the day where we cover email communication. We do some email practice where we have real emails that we've, you know, gotten from our travels and working with clients. And we change the names to protect the innocent, of course, but we go through it and we go pretty in depth into, it's one of my favorite parts of the day because so much is able to be deciphered from emails, right? Except high D emails. High D emails have one sentence. And so it's,
But you can still tell they're a high D, right?
Well, yeah, that in and of itself, right? I always tell groups, what are the clues that this is a high D email? The fact that there aren't that many clues is the biggest clue, right? And so we have lots of tangible examples and, you know, the ability to ask questions and talk through. It's always a really fun part of the day because it sparks a lot of good dialogue and thought-provoking questions and really good stuff. So if you're interested, you know, fun little plug there.
Yeah.
Come to one of our sessions.
And what we have to think about is everything we do and say sends a subconscious message as well as what we actually say or write. And every time that you communicate according to your preference instead of that of the recipient, you're sending the message that you don't care to make your message digestible for them. You don't care to put it in a form that they will prefer, that their preferences, that your preferences are more important than theirs. You know, for everybody who prefers to send email than have a face-to-face conversation, every time you send an email to someone you know would prefer a face-to-face conversation, you're saying my preferences, my desire to write this rather than have a conversation is more important than your desire. And all that does is make it less likely that the information you want to convey or the answer you want to get or the persuasion that you want to succeed in is going to happen. It's less likely because that person knows that you are acting in your preferences and not theirs.
I remember early on in my career when I started learning about DISC, and I learned from Manager Tools. I learned from you and Mark. And I remember having a high D boss. She was very, very high D. And all of my peers and myself, we were constantly, like, a lot of what we did was making sure that we didn't poke the bear, right? Right. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make sure that, you know, she had all the information and that we, and so what I learned from listening to the podcast was my emails to her should have a bluff, and they should, if it requires action from her, tell her right off the bat, right from the get-go, this is what you need to do. And I remember the first time I sent an email like that, and it was counter to the way that I normally sent emails, but it told her exactly what she needs to do on this particular issue. And I remember hearing from my peers, you're in so much trouble. I can't believe that you would write an email and tell her, you know, so bluntly that this is what she needs to do. And I remember thinking for a minute, I'm going to get fired and I'm going to blame Wendy and Mark. And then I'm sitting down with not quite a one-on-one in the way that Manager Tools talks about it, but a meeting with my boss. And she said, that email that you sent me was so helpful. Thank you for telling me exactly what I needed to do and saving me the time of having to get into the weeds and the details. And I was like, jackpot. Yes, that is exactly what I wanted, right?
Right.
And I think, is there a chance that I could have been wrong? Yeah, for sure. But I used all the information that I had in terms of ascertaining her preference in terms of being task focused and being more assertive to leverage that information in a way that I thought would be more effective, not just for me, but for her, for my
exactly.
boss.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry, I just wanted to share that because I do think that sometimes you have to take a little bit of a leap when you are considering someone else's preferences, right?
Well, think about how many emails you send a day. I mean, people say they have 200, 300, 400 emails. I don't anymore, but I used to have volume like that too. And you think about how many, and you send one in a different style to someone, they're either going to notice because it's perfect or they're not going to notice at all, in which case you've lost nothing.
Right. That's a great point.
Oh, and before everybody emails us and asks us what bluff is, bluff stands for bottom line up front. You put bluff and then you say, your action is X, Y, and Z, and I need you to do it by Thursday, whatever. So something like that is the summary of the email.
Yeah. If it's a decision that needs to be made, if it's, you know, this is just for information, right? Like whatever the point of you, I mean, when you think of a bluff, and we have podcasts on this, I always like to think of, you're answering the question, why am I getting this email?
Yes, exactly.
And that sentence should be the answer to that question.
Over the last few years, we've been talking to so many companies, especially in cybersecurity and medical related fields, about their rapid expansion plans over the next few years. It's exciting, but if you're not ready with a powerful hiring engine, it can be daunting for all involved. If you're in an HR role or a key managerial position responsible for making this happen, you may want to consider bringing Manager Tools on site, where we will deliver our effective hiring manager training for up to 30 folks, teaching individual interviewing skills and techniques to ensure you're hiring and retaining the right people. To learn more, contact maggie@manager-tools.com or check it out on our homepage. Look for training for organizations.
Our next point is replying too quickly or too slowly.
And neither is effective. Neither replying too quickly or too slowly is an effective response. And the way I learned this, that you could reply too quickly, is when I was reviewing resumes. And when you review a lot of resumes, I know all of the stuff says, oh, people only look at your resume for 30 seconds and that's a terrible thing. Well, when you look at hundreds of resumes and you know what you're looking for and you know what the job is and you can do it, like a professional recruiter, that's their job. They can do that as fast as you can code. So that's why we can look at resumes really quickly. But what would happen was you'd get a resume, you'd look at it, you'd say no, you'd send the email that said, no, thank you, or you don't fit the requirements or whatever. And people would think that you hadn't read it because you were replying so quickly. And that's what happens with email as well. If you reply too quickly, people will assume that you haven't given it the consideration that they think it's due. So hint to anybody who's reviewing resumes, keep them at least 24 hours before you respond, even if you know. You know, obviously, if the question is, do you want to get lunch? And somebody sent you that in an email, you can decide yes or no in seconds. But for the normal routine work-related emails, the sender wants to believe that you at least considered the answer for a few minutes. The other message that replying too quickly sends is that you're sitting around doing nothing but answering email. If you can answer an email in a minute or 2 minutes or less than 5 minutes, then you must have been in your inbox doing, in inverted commas, email. Mm. And despite the fact that everybody says, oh, this is an email culture and it's expected here, you are not required to answer emails in minutes. And we've said so many times before, there's so many times when you're in a meeting or in the bathroom or traveling or you've gone out to the dentist or whatever, and you don't answer emails in minutes and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And so if nothing happens, if there's no negative effect, there can't be a requirement. So unless your job is to answer email, and unless you're in customer service answering emails, we'd argue your job is not to answer email, then answering within an hour is probably too quick. And people will think that you haven't given their issue due consideration.
Yeah. And even if, well, first of all, for those of you who are not from across the pond, inverted commas, that's quotation marks for us over here. But the other thing I was going to say is, even if some of the assumptions, you know, it's not, the assumption isn't that you're sitting around doing email and they know you're back and forth in between meetings or so on and so forth, right? Kind of going along with what Wendy said, you might get a reputation for, gosh, that person's, I know that person's in a meeting right now. Mm-hmm. And clearly they're on their phone and answering emails.
Oh yeah. That's not a good reputation.
That's not a good reputation to get. Either. Yeah, exactly.
And as an aside, anybody who sends urgent emails, I was looking at Outlook yesterday because I was looking up how to do something for someone else. And we don't use Outlook, so I haven't seen it in a while. And I noticed there were like four levels of priority for emails that you were sending. And clearly,
yeah,
the only person who's deciding on that priority is you, the sender. And we've just said, it's all about the listener or the recipient. Which flag you're going to use for priority is what you're deciding. That doesn't mean that it has the same flag when it arrives.
Yeah. There's a joke about that, Wendy, in the American version of The Office.
Oh, yeah.
When Michael, the boss, says they're giving him grief about marking all emails urgent. And he goes, guys, I mark them urgent A, urgent B, urgent C, and urgent D. Urgent D, you don't even really need to read that. And they're like, well, then why is it urgent?
Exactly. So anybody who sends urgent email, including the Outlook, whoever creates Outlook, need to look up oxymoron in the dictionary. email is not urgent. It can't be. It's by its very nature, it is not urgent. So you can be excused if you don't treat it as urgent. At least you can tell everyone Wendy said so. We'll right. see how many more people I can get fired.
On the other hand, though, there's clearly a point at which an answer to an email is too late. You've missed the boat, right? A decision has been made. Then in that case, you can't expect the thoughts in your email to be considered after the fact, right? Once a decision is made, everyone's moving forward with that decision. If an event has happened and, you know, then you're sending an email, well, you're too late. You've missed it. And so the sweet spot is 24 hours, right? This is kind of the just right level of when you have considered it, you've taken the time and given it its due consideration. And most emails, because of what Wendy just said, by their very nature, a decision doesn't need to be made in less than 24 hours. If it did, something else would be happening, a phone call or a meeting, you know, or something urgent.
Yeah. So when we say sweet spot, the sweet spot is 24 hours, not that you have to wait 24 hours before you answer anything, but within 24 hours. So 24 hours is the outside and probably an hour is the inside. So somewhere between an hour and 24 hours. And I would say somewhere the latest is the end of the next business day.
Really. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is effectively 24 hours, but we're not saying wait 24 hours. If you do it after, you know, if you are following our 3 times a day for email, then in theory, you would answer an email from noon at 5 and an email from after 4 o'clock the next day. So, you know, yeah, it's within the 24 hours. But you have to consider the contents as well, right?
Absolutely. And so sometimes the response isn't the answer to the email. Sometimes the response is if you need more time or you feel like there's additional consideration, then sometimes you might need to say, and it'd be perfectly acceptable to reply to someone and say, I've got this. I need some time to either look at something else or consider all the downstream effects and give them a specific time at which you will reply, right? So maybe you get an email on Monday or Tuesday and you say, got your email. I need to look at the last quarter earnings before I can make a determination on revenue projections for Q1. And so I'm going to, you know, I'll get you an answer by Thursday at 2, right? And then if Thursday at 2 is too late for them, then they have some information. Right? They can say, actually, I need it by this, you know, and that can spark, then there can be a phone call or there can be more information or more action taken just with that small little reply.
Yeah. And I think not enough people don't use this enough. What they think is, oh, I've seen that email. I need to think about it. I'll reply when I've thought about it. And then the other person doesn't know what your timeline is. And they have a timeline in their head of how quickly you normally reply or how soon they need it. And so both of you have a timeline. If that timeline doesn't match and you don't reply by the time that they think they should have replied, that's when you get the whole passive aggressive cliches, which we're going to go on to next of, did you see my email or have you replied to my email and I didn't get it and all of that stuff. So by telling someone, hey, yes, I have it, and here's my timeline, you give them the opportunity to say, oh, that's fine, and not get that into that circle of, did you see my email? And then you ignore that message, and, you know, things go downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly. There is an important thing here, though. If you are going to acknowledge and give a timeline of when you are going to reply with a more substantive answer or reply, you really ought to reply within that time frame. If you say Thursday by 2, you have to hold true to your word or otherwise communicate. You know, if something comes in into the fold that you weren't anticipating or if you can't access the information, you need to communicate that right away because now you've set an expectation and presumably they have done whatever they need to do on their end to move things around to prepare for that decision at Thursday at 2, right? So you should hold true to your word and meet that timeline. Again, especially, and this is, you know, a small thing probably, but if I have someone reply to me and give me a timeline for when they're going to reply, and that could be fine. That could be maybe more aggressive than what I have in my head or more conservative or whatever, right? But if they don't meet that, then my immediate thought is, that was your timeline.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I didn't make that up. Yeah,
right?
I didn't arbitrarily assign you Thursday at 2 p.m. You said Thursday at 2 p.m.
Yeah.
So you can't meet your own timelines.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's just worse, right?
Oh,
so, and talking of worse, there are people who have a reputation for not reading their emails. And these people are not necessarily the same people, but I put them in the same group of the people who say, oh, I'm double booked for meetings because they think that it makes them sound important. And people don't read their emails because they think it makes it sound, or they think they make it look as if they have so much email because they're so important, they can't possibly get to it all. And so they never read it, or they're doing something more important. And what happens is not that. What happens in other parts of the organization, people say, oh, don't bother sending her an email, she never replies. And people think that that person is a flake, or that person is just trying to look important when they're not. It's just a bad way to get a bad reputation for being unable to control your workload, for being uncommunicative, and to being unable to work well in a team, because working in a team means communicating with people.
Mm-hmm.
And you might, you know, those people might think, oh, well, I'm above all of that because I'm so important. Well, you're not. And
no.
Nobody is. And if you are, then get an admin and have your admin answer your email, which is fine.
If email is a proxy for how important you are, my spam folder must think I'm the president of the United States.
That is so
because
true.
So many.
True. Yeah. Okay, so we've given everybody a lot to think about. We gave them the whole communicate the way that people want them to communicate, and do email 3 times a day podcast, and thinking about timeliness when replying. So we'll stop here, and then we'll come back next week with the other 4 mistakes, which are slightly easier, and we'll give them a week to settle in to these ideas. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.